To the May 24th, 2011, meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session and we discussed our public employee performance evaluation with the superintendent. We also met in open session on that item. The board also met for a conference with our labor negotiators regarding our negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay, seeing yes. Let's go ahead and look at approval of the minutes, please. So we have, I believe, a couple of sets of minutes. The first set of minutes was for May 10th. Do I hear a motion on that? As amended, by the way, there are some changes here that were placed at our desks. It's been moved by Mr. Buckman. Do we have a second? Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any discussion?
Mr. Kratzer from the audience thinks that it's not entirely accurate that Ms. Stoneman dissented, so I'm not quite sure. On public comments, I apologize. I'm not on the right page.
Page three.
Middle of page three. Thank you. I'm not quite sure if anybody has a different recollection.
Yeah.
Is Ms. Stoneman here to recount that? Public comment, is that a possibility?
Yeah, I'm not sure that she dissented. I would say that Mrs. Blakely dissented and took us all to task, actually. Is there somebody that would like to address the matter of whether Mrs. Stoneman dissented or not? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody that would like to talk about that. My recollection as well is that Mrs. Stoneman did not dissent.
Mr. Buckmore wants to talk on the approval.
Okay, so Mr. Buckmore, are you here?
Yes.
You've indicated that you'd like to talk about approval of this approval of the minutes. So,
from here or there,
up at the podium, if you would, please. Yeah.
Good evening. I can't address what Ms. Stoneman did. I barely remember what I was doing, but I would like to address my comments. If I left the impression that the main thrust of my comment was that I wanted a cost of living adjustment, that is not correct. That is what the minutes reflect, and that is not what I came to say. And if I left that impression, my apologies. My main thrust is that I would like to resolve the current contract negotiations in a timely manner. I would like you to direct your representatives to return to the table, which I think would lead us to that goal. This idea of keep moving on later and later, that was the thrust of my comments, that we don't need to do that if you could direct them to return. It's frustrating to be your employee. It's frustrating to hear you say that it could be resolved and then not have an opportunity to resolve it. And yet watch in the current agenda this evening that we can spend money, $6 million that for upcoming initiatives, but we can't settle this contract because we're not quite sure where the state budget will go. So anyway, rather than making public comment, I'd just like to address that I don't believe those minutes reflect what I was intending to say, and I think if we go back and looked at it, that wasn't what I was saying, that my main thrust is not that I want a COLA. I'd like to resolve the issue.
Okay.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
So, Phil, you made the motion. Is that correct?
I had the discussion. I don't believe
Okay. Who made the motion? Mark, you made the motion. So, would you go with an amendment, say, to clarify what Mr. Buckmoyer said and perhaps strike what Mrs. Stoneman said? Okay. Would that be acceptable to you, Mr. Quisenberry, as well? Okay. So currently we have a motion and a second. for the minutes with the with some changes in it that which would reflect what Mr. Buck Moyer clarified this evening, and then also that Mrs. will strike Mrs. Stoneman dissented. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm seeing that as a consensus from the board. So that would be the motion then, I believe. Okay. Is there any more discussion on the minutes? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and take a vote on that. All in favor of approval of the minutes as amended? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, it carries.
I would like to abstain. I was not present.
Okay. We have 5 ayes, 1 abstention. Motion carries. Let's move on to, and I need to apologize, but I had a problem with my board book, and so I took my notes on my computer, and that's why it's here, so I apologize for having it here and kind of going through things. I don't see that we have any student representatives this evening, so we'll bypass that. Let's move on then to our presentation, which is Employees of the Year. Mr. Robinette.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, every year we get to acknowledge our Employees of the Years for various different categories, and we have 4 of them here to recognize tonight. Actually, I believe it looks as if one of our individuals isn't here. I've been scanning the room, and Morro Bay High School has a conflict tonight, and that may explain part of it. But I do want to have the supervisors of these individuals come up and tell you a few words about them, because this is really a wonderful group of employees. So first of all, for our physical support employee of the year, I'd like to invite Sue Thorson to come up and say a few words.
Pleasure tonight to recognize Rosalie Kinney as a physical support employee of the year. Rosalie is our baker. She comes in each morning at 5:30 in order to prepare the baked goods for all of the school cafeterias. When an item is on the elementary school lunch menu, this may mean making 1,500 to 1,600 servings of the item. Our program has changed a lot over the years, but at one time we were quite known for our cookies, especially the peanut butter cookies. These were made from scratch by Rosalie, who scooped all the dough and pressed all the cookies. And so in her time, she's probably made thousands and thousands of cookies for us. Today, she spends far more time baking whole grain quick breads for our elementary schools. She also bakes off rolls for some of our specialty sandwiches. She makes coffee cakes, cinnamon rolls, and she still makes cookies, but these are the low-fat, low-sugar variety. As the food service program has evolved and changed over the years, Rosalie has always been up to the challenges that we've presented to her, never complaining, always making it work for us. When she's finished with her own work, she tends to be a team player and looks around to see what else she can do to help out and to help her coworkers. Rosalie is a native of San Luis Obispo County. She's a product of our school system. She went to Morro Elementary, San Luis Obispo Junior High School, and she graduated from San Luis Obispo High School. She's married to Robert Kinney, whose family has lived in the area since the 1800s. She's married, and together they have raised 6 children, and they now enjoy more than 50 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Rosalie worked at the Madonna Inn restaurant before coming to work for us in 1986. And she was promoted to baker in 1993, so she's been baking for us for 18 years. It's really a pleasure to work with Rosalie. I'm so happy that she received this honor.
We have all benefited by Rosalie. And for our reception tonight, you should know, Rosalie baked cookies for us. To introduce our Administrator of the Year, I'd like to have Jeff Guy make that introduction.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here to represent Denise Gello. Can she stand up here?
Sure.
Torture her just a little more. I mean, it's my job. Yeah, right here would be great.
I got your back.
Initially, I would just like to share some data to help us illustrate the breadth of what she covers in her department. 1,700 students are transported daily, over 300,000 students per year. 1,600 field trips coordinated yearly, an average of 8 per day during the school year. Over 2,000 home-to-school miles driven daily. In a year, that's 405,000 miles, including district-driven trips. So if you think about it, that's 300,000 students around our planet 14 times. Any volunteers? Yeah, is that a trip you'd like to go on? Not to mention our... Pardon me? Ah, there you go. Good man. Not to mention the regular fleet of vehicles driven daily by all the other district departments. Denise is very hardworking. She is always a fair, caring, and patient supervisor. She works with and for everyone, showing appreciation and understanding. Her staff respects her and know that her decisions are to serve all interests. She always stays calm and is concise. I heard that. when addressing difficult interactions. The department's stringent regulatory inspections go perfectly, which is just unheard of. It's really quite remarkable. They don't find anything to correct. It's remarkable. It says a lot about everything that goes on in her department. Denise continually searches for the most cost-effective solutions to save the district dollars every way she can, from field trips to vehicle pricing, finding grants, or catching errors in billing. Denise is the first one to say that the high level of dedication and skills of all of her employees is the number one reason for the success and quality in services for the district and the community. And above all, she's really just a delightful person to work with every day. 15 years. Very nice.
I'd just like to say thank you for the honor, and none of this would be possible without my boisterous, shy group of staff here, and if it wasn't for them, it wouldn't matter. So I've worked at a lot of districts in my career, and this is as good as it gets. So there they are. Thank you.
We even have some retirees coming out of the woodwork for this occasion. To recognize our school support employee of the year, I'd like to invite our Director of Information Services and Technology, Amelia Samos.
Well, it's my delight and pleasure to tell you a little bit about Don Orr. Don has been in the department for almost 10 years. And I've been there for 7, so it's really been a joy to work with him. He's one of the most skilled and hardworking employees that I've ever had the pleasure of supervising. He's been a network specialist with our district and is one of a team of 3 network specialists that support about 2,700 computers in all of our schools. Personnel Services refers to Don as their secret weapon. Whenever they're experiencing technical issues, Don is highly skilled and thrives on solving unique problems. He's extremely patient. And when you get an email response detailing what happened and what was wrong, you will come away knowing a lot more about the issue and being very well educated in the technology problem. This is when his passion really shines. Don is a team player, always working to diagnose and resolve issues, even when it means staying late or working weekends. In fact, he spent the last 2 days at Los Osos solving a network issue there. So he prides himself in doing a great job, and I feel that he really deserves this recognition, and I appreciate the fact that he will be getting that recognition tonight for the tremendous work that he does for us district-wide. So with that, I'll invite Don up here.
And I don't see our San Luis Coastal's Clerical Support Employee of the Year. I believe, knowing Cindy, she's at the Morro Bay Choir concert tonight. What I can tell you, and I'm sure Dan Andrus, her principal, would say a lot of nice things. What I can tell you is Cindy Varney is our Clerical Support Employee of the Year. She has been in the school district since 1986, and she spent the first half of that 13-year period at Morro Elementary. I actually see some old Morro L people here. I should say old, former Morro L people here in the audience. And then she's been the last 12 years at Morro Bay High School. She is the school secretary. She is an incredible person. Everything Cindy does, I can tell you from my experiences, with grace and with a smile. And she's a wonderful employee. And so maybe we'll get her here next time to just recognize her. But so please give your applause to Cindy Varney, our Clerical Support Employee of the Year. With that, we want to have a quick little reception so we can take some pictures of these people for the press and enjoy some of Rosalie's cookies. And okay, we'll be back.
We'll take a 10-minute recess, and I'm going to stick to a 10-minute recess because we do have quite a bit of other business to attend to, and we have a number of people that would like to address the board during public comment.
Thank you.
So there are cookies in the back. Thank you very much. So the next thing we have is correspondence. And let me get to where I need to be here. Sorry. The board did receive two letters, one dated May 10th, 2011, from Nathaniel and Stacy White, urging the board to reduce the percentage of district funds allocated to reserves to the 3% requirement and to commit the other 7% currently allocated to reserves to classroom support. We also received a letter from on May 18th, 2011, From Rich Leatherwood, a client of Achievement House, urging the board to retain teacher David Lopez. I'm sorry, what? David Perez, I'm sorry. And then at the podium, at the table here, we received a letter from Lois Dunn, from Peggy Ann Kane, Kitty, I don't have my glasses on, Kitty Greenhaw, Vivian DeSalva, Rennie Miner, and I believe all of these are supporting the Adults with Disabilities program. And we thank you very much for corresponding with the board. Okay, then let's move on to public comment. The board has about 10 requests to speak tonight, and so as I did the last time, last meeting if you were here, I'm just going to remind people that the maximum amount of time we want to spend is about 20 minutes. At 20 minutes, I'm going to go back to the board and ask the board if they would like to continue with the public comment. We would ask that you keep all of your comments to 3 minutes. And if you want to repeat what somebody has already said, of course, feel free to come on up. But we would just ask you to say perhaps that you agree with what the other person says. Another thing you can do, too, to show your support is raise your hand to show your support for what a speaker is saying, and that's helpful for the board to see that as well. And the last thing is, if you would prefer, you can always write a comment to us, and Mrs. Holmes can direct you to where those are. The board will read every written comment that we get, and we take those all very seriously. And then the final thing is that the board can't and won't respond individually to public comments. So just know that we are listening very closely to what you say, but we won't be responding individually to them. Okay? So Mr. Angel is going to call two names. The first person is the person that will be speaking, and then I'll call essentially the person that's up to bat. So please be ready when your name is called so that we can get you up here and we can hear what you have to say. Are we ready, Mr. Angel?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So we'll start with Jody Barker, and following Jody Barker will be Peggy Kane.
I think I've already got one, sir. Okay. Thank you.
I can hear.
My name, as you have just found out, is Jody Barker. I'm president of People First San Luis Obispo, a self-advocacy organization run by people and for people with developmentally disabilities. This is my friend, Billy Baxmeyer, an adult ed teacher and advisor to People First of San Luis Obispo. People First of SLO empowers adults with developmental disabilities to write statewide law like AB 18, the Signature Stamp Act, and to educate our community with documents like the Credo of Support DVD and our People First Language Statement, which we will has already been given to you. Our organization is a direct product of the Adults adult school teachers. For decades, the adult school has supported people first of slow by providing positive, knowledgeable advisors and educate, assist, transport, coach, encourage, laugh, and cry with us. People first advocacy, people first and slow, has got to have people who know advocacy. You just can't have someone support us without the knowledge and background of the spirit of self-advocacy and the philosophy that we are all people first. I personally find that I respond to some teachers better than others. Our adult school educators provide the empathy and rapport that is necessary for all of us to get the best ongoing education in our adult lives. They have taught me how to deal with all kinds of people with equality, truth, and humor.
Sir, could you begin to wrap up? And if you'd like, please, we'd love to see a copy of that statement. If you could give that to Mrs. Holmes.
I believe you already have been given it, sir.
If I may, you all have a copy of this speech with the People First of Slow brochure and the DVDs.
Okay, thank you. If you could wrap up, please.
Okay, would you
like okay. I will make it as quick as I can. This strong support has always demonstrated to our group, People First of Slow, that we must advocate for ourselves and others and fight for justice and that which is right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So, Peggy Kane, followed by Maureen McGee.
Dear school board members, I have always liked Rosemary Flamian because she used to be my supervisor right in the nursery, right at Achievement House Base, but now she works right at Leap 2, and nobody wishes to lose her, and I do not wish to lose her at all either. I am thankful that Rosemary Flamian has helped me to learn a whole lot more about flowers and plants. I like Gay Donovan. She is my supervisor at Mailing and Moore, and she helps me to become a better person and a better worker, and she helps me out with my goals, and nobody wishes to lose her, and I do not wish to lose her at all either. I am thankful that Gay has helped me out on job skills. I like Billy Baxmeyer because he helps me out in People First and he supports me in my desire to live right in Arroyo Grande, right on Cortland Street. Nobody wishes to lose him, and I do not wish to lose him at all either. I am thankful that Billy Baxmeyer has made me a much more better advocate. Sincerely, Peggy Ann Kane.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kane.
Maureen McGee, followed by Carrie Sorrell.
Hi, I'm Maureen McGee, and I'm here tonight speaking in support of the district's Adults with Disabilities program. And I didn't expect this. Peggy's my sister. She was born mentally retarded. And my parents were advised to put her in an institution. Thankfully, they disregarded this advice, and they raised her at home with her six younger siblings, of which I was one. It wasn't easy. Peg preferred to be alone, had sustained periods of odd solitary play, insisted on sameness, was very resistant to changes in routine, prone to tantrums and self-injury. My parents did their best. They sought advice from professionals, but there wasn't much available in the early 1960s, and no one had heard the word autism. They sent her to the local public schools. There wasn't a school psychologist, a speech or language specialist, behavior specialist, program specialist. I often wonder what Peg's life and my family's life would have been like had we had the resources that exist for families today raising a child with a developmental disorder. Today, Peg lives in a local community. Is this on? In a wonderful group home where she's so loved. Monday through Friday, she goes to work at Mailings and More, and here she receives skills and training and the support that she needs to help her be a productive, happy member of society. Through her years at this job, I have seen the support staff come and go, but the one constant has been her adults with disabilities teachers. These are specialized, credentialed teachers with the motivation and the desire to dedicate their careers to students like Peg. My sister finally has the support that she needed so long ago. And like most of her classmates, Peg's parents are not here to see that or to speak out on her behalf. But I'm here, and I want my sister and her fellow adult learners with disabilities to keep these credentialed teachers in their lives. Without a specialized credentialed teacher to be there day to day to guide and teach, these historically marginalized individuals will suffer, and subsequently will our community. Please do not underestimate the impact that these teachers have on the lives of the students, their families, and the community. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much.
Carrie Cerrone, followed by Gay Donovan.
Hello, everyone. I'm Carrie Cerrone, and I have been an adult education teacher with the district for 26 years. The Adults with Disabilities program of the San Luis Coastal Adult School originated in the mid-60s with one small adult basic education class housed in Achievement House in San Luis. Today, we have expanded into 8 programs based in 3 local host organizations, Pathpoint, Achievement House, and Casa de Vida. Our programs serve 203 adult learners with developmental disabilities in San Luis Coastal School District. Adults with Disabilities staff is composed of 7, or now 6, teachers specifically credentialed by the state of California to provide instruction to adults with developmental disabilities. We are contracted on a yearly basis and classified part-time temporary, teaching 32 hours per week over a 12-month year. We take great pride in our California Department of Education approved curriculum, which includes adult basic education, literacy advancement, self-advocacy training, community awareness, job skills preparation, vocational education, computer training, and adaptive technology training. Our educational mission is simply to give our students the skills and information that will allow them to maximize their potential for independence, living as valued and contributing members of our community. As a program, we have delivered 45 consecutive years of instruction to our students, a historically marginalized and frequently underserved group. Without the support provided by the school district, these students would lose access to formal education, an asset that allows them to move toward, and in many cases achieve, self-sufficiency, employment, and regular lives in our community. The vision and generosity of the district have provided the education and training that results in inclusion, acceptance, and a richer, more diverse community for us all. Thank you.
Thank you, and I do want to acknowledge the people that are raising their hand. It helps us get a feeling for who's observing this and what you're saying. Thank you.
So it's Gay Donovan, followed by Krotzer.
Good evening. My name is Gay Donovan. For over 25 years, I have worked as a teacher for the Adults with Disabilities Program. For 20 years, my work site has been with the same Department of Achievement House, which is called Mailing and More. Dear Dr. Prater and school board members, I am writing and speaking to you today about the valuable work that is taking place in our Adults with Disabilities program and my concern about our students' future if we are not there. Our small group of credentialed teachers was formerly 8 teachers at 32 hours a week, plus subs and part-time teachers, and we will soon be 6 teachers at 32 hours weekly, no subs, and 1 teacher at 1.5 days. We feel that we're the heart and the backbone of our work sites at Achievement House, Pathpoint, and Casa de Vida. Let me give you an example of what I do. For over 10 years, I worked with a young woman who had started at Mailing and More following her completion of high school here in San Luis Obispo. I helped her increase her self-confidence, counseled her and her friends at work in ways that they could get along better with less hurt feelings, and made sure that she learned the clerical skills she needed at Mailing and More until they were honed to perfection. After about 10 years, she felt ready to move on. She currently works on a supported employment crew for Achievement House. In the future, she could have her own job in the community with a job coach to assist her in getting started. Her family has thanked me many times. I know that my fellow teachers have their own success stories to share as we all plan and work with each individual student to achieve his or her fullest potential. Since most of us have 20 to more than 30 years of experience, we are role models and essentially teachers for our other host agency staff at our work sites. The host agency staff who are paid entry-level wages are required to have a high school diploma, and no previous experience in the field is required. At Achievement House, there is frequent turnover. One position at Mailing and More has turned over 4 times in less than 1.5 years. The constant presence of a teacher provides our students with much-needed stability and consistency. I contend that the benefits of knowledge gained through our education, experience, and history with our students cannot be replaced, especially by our host agencies who have already experienced painful budget cuts. With all due respect, the idea of basing our program's future on fundraising puts ours on shaky grounds, especially in these uncertain times. All we teachers want simply is to continue the important work of educating our students towards lives of independence and contribution. The Adults with Disabilities program has already been reduced through attrition. At this point, we are willing to consider a reduction in our hours to further streamline our program. Because it's the right thing to do, I urge you to consider continuing our program a priority. This has been a successful partnership between San Luis Coastal and our host agencies for over 40 years. In addition, our program provides continuity to the support provided by the district to our students in the past during their K through 12 years. Our students, their families, our host agencies, our future students, and the possibilities of a more diverse community are dependent on your decision to stand up in favor of the continued education of a highly valued group of lifelong learners, our students. Thank you so much for your time.
Great, thank you very much.
Ms. Krotzer, followed by David Sims.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shush Krotzer, and the wealth and humanity of our community, or any community, can be seen in how it treats the people who need help in its community. And I think that's a really important thing that we often forget. By cutting the funds for the teachers for the disability program, we're basically saying we don't care about these people, because these funds change their lives. It's not just a little something they can do on the side. This is their livelihood, their quality of life. It's extremely important. I have an autistic brother who's 55 years old. He's classically autistic, he's nonverbal, and he is fortunate in a way that he doesn't live in the state of California. He lives in Connecticut, where the people there seem to show a lot of respect and provide ongoing education and support for him. He works in a sheltered situation, and he has tutoring four nights a week still, and he has a wonderful quality of life. He's a happy, productive person as a result of the education that he's been given on a continuing basis. Please do not show the community and these disabled adults who rely solely on the education and assistance from this program that you just don't care enough. I'd be sort of ashamed to live in a district that has $25 to $30 million in reserves that says we need to cancel a program like this for these people. These are members of our community. Many of them, like my brother, are unable to speak for themselves, so we have to speak up for them, and I hope you all will do the same. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
David Sims.
My name is David Sims. I'm sorry, it took me by surprise. I'm from Long Beach, California, and I'm a graduate of Long Beach Poly High School, and I from there I went to Arkansas Tech University. After I finished playing football, I started working with people with disabilities. I started out in Arkansas at a place called Friendship, helped with people who just, you know, needed to be more accessible to the community, trying to integrate with the community more. And from there, I worked in a facility in Texas, a neurological facility that helped kind of along the same lines. And from there, you know, I just enjoyed working with people with disabilities. Sorry, I'm kind of nervous, but I just want to speak plainly. But never have I been anywhere like San Luis Obispo, where they were treated as people first, and I believe that is totally due to all the adult with disabilities instructors that we have. We have at our program, we have men's groups and women's groups that help with the people with their this doesn't mean, but to help with their you know, their so it's just their home stuff, you know, it's just a really, it's truly people's first, and that is totally due to the consistency and the quality of the adult with disabilities teachers. They spoke about the turnover that we have in different facilities, and that is so true. But as you can, as they spoke earlier about the decades of service that they have provided, as to that backbone, like they have mentioned, that really is a key to the care. And I myself have learned so much. I do have a bachelor's degree, and still I am working at that facility, and that is due part because I'm learning so much about agenda making and planning and being on committees and, you know, just me being here today. So that is totally due to the people, the adult ed instructors that we have, like Carol Lopez and Billy Baxmeyer and those others that are here. I would feel it would be a dramatic drop in the quality of service that we provide our people with disabilities to let our adult instructors, you know, let them go. So with that being said, that's it.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And I want to tell you that your son should be proud of you for standing up here and talking. You got a great kid, by the way. We do have a written comment from Brian Miller as well, so thank you very much. We want to acknowledge that. Did you want to speak?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I filled out the wrong form.
Well, come on down, Brian.
I'm pink. I guess pink speaks. Brian Miller, San Luis Obispo High School. I want to tell you a story about a student, former student I met this Saturday because I was downtown. His name is Greg Elmore. Greg was my student after he had been in a horrific accident when he was a junior in high school. He was turning left out of McDonald's and got broadsided by a car. and Greg's whole life changed instantly. Greg came to us and entered our program and became a student with us, and I went my way and went up to the high school. And I got caught up with Greg a little bit. And what I know about Greg is that Greg voted. Greg got married. Greg lives independently. This is a man with a body that is mangled, and that's a harsh term, but that's also a fairly accurate term. His intelligence is intact, but his body won't let him do certain things. Greg's attended Cuesta College, and as far as I know, he's been living independently for the last 15 or 20 years or so. All of this is possible for Greg Elmore because of the program that he went through via Friendship School and the programs that he advanced to subsequent to Friendship School. That is Greg, and that is his life, and he is one of many, and there are others in the audience that I'm sure have similar stories and similar circumstances. I will tell you this. Greg Elmore, as a student in this district, is just as important as the valedictorian at our high school, whoever that is this year. Now, the second tragedy about cutting this program will be the six teachers that we're going to lose that will one day face unemployment. These teachers as well are as important in what they do for this district as I am for what I do for this district. There is no level at to which I am more important than them. They serve their students and I serve my students with all of our heart and all of our energy. I know that this is a budget time and I know you have to make cuts and I know these cuts are not easy to make. But as I understand it, we're one of the few districts that still serves adults with developmentally disabilities. Most of the other school districts have somehow cut or ridded themselves of those programs. In that light, I feel proud to work for a district that maintains that program for this population of San Luis Obispo and surrounding areas. And if we want to maintain our distinctness above the other school districts, then it's programs like this that we keep, even at a cost that may mean we sacrifice somewhere else. It's those six employees that we keep, even if it means the way they can. We have that distinction. Let's keep that distinction. I think, in the words of Dr. Laura Schlesinger, God bless her career, she would say this, now go do the right thing. Thank you.
And I want to thank you, Mr. Miller. And I'd also like to acknowledge you as being someone who shared your life story on through the SELPA and was recognized by National Public Radio, I believe. And so thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board in public comment? Okay, Mr. Bedrigan.
I'm Bruce Bedrigan, President of San Luis Coach Teachers Association. I'll save a lot of time because I think Brian eloquently summed up what a lot of us feel is really the essential thing. It comes down to the whole idea that many of the teachers in this district stayed in this district because we felt that this was the best district on the Central Coast. We wanted to work here. We have an opportunity that other districts don't. We can afford to carry this program forward because we have the money to do so. And by doing that, we will save our community and our county a burden that otherwise they will have to pay when some of these individuals become institutionalized. So what we're doing by keeping these students and having teachers that help them learn to be independent and become productive citizens in our society, we are truly doing the right thing. And it costs us, but it's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And again, we want to thank everybody for coming and speaking to us in public comment. We'll move on to the superintendent's updates. Dr. Prater.
Good evening. Okay. Scholarships at high schools. They support the Walk for Autism. They are our resource parents in our district. And we have two in our school district, Naomi Blakely as well as Michelle Ralzon. Michelle has been appointed by the Board of Education here in San Luis Obispo 2 terms, and we're asking for her reelection tonight as a 3rd term. She's not here tonight, but we want to thank her for her pay it forward, so to speak, as she's always at the monthly CAC meetings, and she's helping to support students with disabilities as well as advocating and supporting parents in the community. Thank you.
I believe that will come up this later, item number 14 under our action consent agenda.
Ready for the next item? Okay. Our wellness committee, our district wellness committee, is made up of representatives from all of our school sites. Sometimes they're parents, sometimes they're teachers or administrators. And part of our charge, besides meeting 4 times a year, is to provide the board with an update on our work. So that's what I'm going to do tonight. Our goal this year was to continue to educate our students, staff, and parents about staying healthy. And what we did this year was we divided up into groups and worked on 6 projects. One of them, and that's not intended for you to read, but a lot of times we have all of these rules and laws about food sales to our students at schools, and sometimes that's confusing. And so this year, Sue Thorson and I and others put our heads together and thought, how can we put it on one sheet and just make it clear for everybody? So that was one thing we did. We also reminded people about our district guidelines, our board policy, like one line in there that says food provided in the classroom by school staff must meet or exceed state and federal nutrition standards. I don't think we would have had those cookies given out today, maybe the low-fat ones. But also a reminder that students look at what us adults do, and so if as much as possible in our lunchrooms, in our classrooms, we can have healthy food as well as treats, that would be a good example for our students. A couple of the people worked on tips in English and in Spanish. We established these last year. We added some more, and what we do is we disseminate them to our school sites so that the schools can include them in their newsletters or that students could read them in the bulletins at the secondary level. We drafted some wellness survey questions, and we didn't use them. See, we even have one we have highlighted. We're still thinking about the wording there. But our intention is to make those part of our larger survey, hopefully next year, as part of our Culture of Care initiative, not have a bunch of different surveys going out, but seeing how this could be incorporated into that Culture of Care initiative and how we collect feedback. Another pair thought, or it was 3 people in that group, wanted to help educate our families also, and they thought maybe we should come up with a calendar of ideas, one a month. That's easy enough to do, right? Not one every day, but one a month. And so in January, you could see there it says, okay, clean out your closets, cupboards, drawers, and pantry, and donate any unwanted food to the local food bank. But it also would list what's the local produce for that month so that you can go out and try new fruits and veggies. And we're going to see if maybe we can produce these little calendars that people can put on their refrigerators, be able to distribute them to all our parents and keep that wellness message in front of everybody's eyes. And then our first lady, Michelle Obama, has been backing this campaign, Let's Move. And so one idea we also want to put into place for next year, and this is really a draft at the elementary, being able to produce these posters to put in our classroom so that it's a constant reminder and it's a quick, you know, five easy messages there. We also came up with a version for secondary where the people are a little bit older. And then we would distribute a little pack, very simple, with the five simple steps to success that explain those five areas of let's move. When I come back next year, we'll probably have more information about what California is doing, because Let's Move is organized by Michelle Obama, but Tom Torlakson said California is going to get in on that.
They're not exempt from...
There are certain laws that say between, you know, half an hour before school starts and half an hour after school starts, food sales to students are restricted. After-school events that are right after and, you know, put on by parents, they're exempted. There's, you know, it's kind of a little loophole or Swiss cheese sometimes approach, and so it's sometimes hard to navigate, but our committee just tries to stick with the positive, follow the law, and try to educate, not be the wellness police, but just try to encourage everybody to do what's right.
I appreciate it. I don't appreciate the legislators' misguided attempt to kill activities, or maybe they didn't consider that, but thank you.
Thank you, Rita, and I appreciate the healthy discussion we just had. We look forward to this for next year.
Thank you, Mr. President. Since we met last, the governor's May revise to the January budget has been released, and in general, the information that the governor's providing us is very positive for school districts for the first time in a long time. The essential pieces of his May revise are, and these are the good news, is there'll be flat funding from 2010-11 into 2011-12. Essentially, we're going to get what we got this year, next year. Elimination of an existing $434 million in deferrals. For a revenue limit district, this is key because it combos up with the cancellation of a recently enacted $2.1 billion worth of deferrals that we're going to put many districts in a position in May and June of not being able to meet their payroll because the state was going to withhold the cash that they owed to the school districts as part of their apportionments. There's the elimination of the $330 per average daily attendance reduction to the revenue limit that was going to manifest itself for us in a larger fair share of pain. So we would have had a 8.92% reduction in our calculated revenue limit, amounting to about $4.2 million, plus $349 per student withheld by the state of California. That's now gone away, 10-11. The primary focus on the continuation of the current tax structure, the extension of the current tax structure, is probably going to be an issue for an election in the future. And by the future, maybe November, maybe 2012, but most likely not to be enacted in, that's a little early, that wasn't part of this one, but that's okay, in 11-12. The slide up on the wall reflects some discussion that we're going to have about our current budget projection for 11-12 versus our 10-11. And there'll be two pages that we'll go through, and it'll give you a better understanding of how the impact of the May revision is going to look and feel for our budget in 11-12. The main issue for us is that the flat funding from 10-11 to 11-12 is extended. We will have a fair share of pain, as I spoke of, 8.92%. equaling $4.2 million. We originally had projected $6.2 million, $6.4 million, potentially up to $10 million. That's now off the table, not to be revisited, and in the year of 11-12. We'll see what 12-13 brings us.
Questions for Mr. Miller? Okay. Dr. Prater.
Good evening, Board. I would like to, first of all, acknowledge the comments that were made by our guests tonight regarding the Adults with Disabilities Program. And I jotted some notes down, and what I heard was the People First organization is a critical feature to providing advocacy for adults with disabilities. And I've heard nothing but very powerful things about that organization and that group. I also acknowledge that our teachers that are currently with us have over 100 years of collective experience in our district. That can't be understated. The impact they've made through the years has been no doubt thing. So I would like to tell you tonight that I don't disagree with a single word that was spoken tonight. In fact, I have a heart for it. The cruel irony is, though I'm not asking you to make any decisions this evening, I am sharing with you the cruel irony in all this, in that Adults with Disability is close to my home, I'm very close to my nephew, who is an adult with disabilities, with a significant disability, and he lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and benefits from a host agency that works with him and his family. I shared this context this evening. I shared it today with my parents, my mother in particular, and it brought her to tears. So I'm letting you know that I acknowledge what's being said, and I don't take any of these conversations lightly, and I know you don't either. I took some notes down today, and I wanted to do that because I think it's important that I not lose focus. For decades, our adult school programs were funded with restricted categorical dollars through the state of California. In other words, adult school funding was required to be used for just that, providing adults with high school diploma classes and offering a wide range of opportunities from English as second language to career classes, all the way to serving adults with disabilities. In 2008, these categorical restrictions were lifted. That's a fancy political maneuver to push the decision to the local level. So the categorical restrictions were lifted, allowing districts to redirect funds into the general fund. Throughout the state, since 2008, these dollars have been used to redirect resources and funds to the core K-12 mission. Adult education programs are taking a major hit in California as a result, with either the complete elimination of the program or a drastically scaled back model. For three decades, San Luis Coastal has developed and refined its adult education program by serving thousands of adults in our community. In fact, prior to the legislator's decision to sweep categorical dollars into the general fund, San Luis Coastal created a win-win genius business education model, I might add, by developing a partnership with Achievement House with Disabilities in San Luis Obispo is second to none, and that needs to be stated. It speaks to our awareness of supporting adults who are most vulnerable and do not necessarily have a voice in our community. Now, with that said, this win-win scenario ended in San Luis Coastal when the legislature effectively decided to sweep the categorical dollars into the general fund. Since 2008, San Luis Coastal has continued to fund the adult school programs by using the reserves that were accumulated through the good years in the adult school program. Most school districts in California have used this opportunity to redirect the funds to support K-12 learning. I want to say to you this evening that any way you try to characterize or frame this issue, it doesn't settle well. It does not settle well with me. I know it doesn't settle well with any of you. I've had a wonderful opportunity to have field trips to each of our host agencies, and I've come to know briefly the integrity and the incredible skill sets of our adults with disabilities staff. They truly are amazing human beings doing amazing work. Unfortunately, you hired me to guide you and make recommendations to you. And I want to frame it this way. We our calling, our mission is a K-12 mission. The state legislature has confirmed that. As stated in our mission, and I want to read this to you. I took it off our wall today and I typed it, and I think it's important that we read it. The mission of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District is to educate students to become self-sufficient individuals who are capable of making significant contributions to society and managing change in the culturally diverse world community. This district guarantees to provide the highest quality programs and services which will give all students the opportunity to realize their full intellectual, physical, creative, emotional, and social potential. As we weigh in on our next steps in the budget development process, it is my responsibility to provide recommendations. I'm trying to develop a recommendation for you in the coming weeks that you can somehow rest at night knowing that you've done the right thing. And I'm struggling to make that because I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I will bring my best recommendation forward to you in the coming weeks. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Prater. Let's move on to item number one, proposed revisions to Board Policy 3100, referring to the budget. Mr. Miller?
Actually, I'm going to take this,
Julie,
for Mr. Miller.
Mr. Miller, you changed and you're much better looking.
Oh, it's much shorter. Much shorter, too.
Much shorter.
And quieter. Tonight, we're presenting for your discussion and possible approval, if you choose to do so, the revisions to Board Policy 3100, which has to do with our budget. Most of the changes to this policy are just changing or adding language to the policy that aligns with CSBA recommendations and really aligns it to our current procedures. However, there is one area that is new policy, and it's on page 1.3 under fund balance. And Government Accounting Standards Board Statement 54 requires governments now to report their ending balances a little bit differently than we used to. And I'll just kind of run down the list for you. What we used to call reserve for inventory and prepaids is now going to be called non-spendable items. Restricted balances haven't changed. They're still restricted. What we used to call designated for other purposes now has two categories. There's one called committed and one called assigned. Committed funds are funds that the board takes formal action on to commit for a specific purpose, and they cannot be used for any other purpose unless the board takes action to use them for another purpose. Assigned is more closely aligned with what used to be called designated. Those are reserved amounts that are intended for a specific purpose but don't have to be used for that purpose. And then we have unassigned funds, which are the same as undesignated funds. Something new there is that only the general fund can have unassigned funds, and the reserve for economic uncertainties will actually fall into unassigned, but it'll have a separate line item. And you'll see this on the budget that we present in a couple of weeks. They'll have these new categories on there. Some other new wording is included in the long-term financial obligations portion, which has to do with our other post.
Okay. Anybody else? I wanted to comment on, let me find it, page 22, where I made this note. Trying this, where we're actually, it says the board review shall also identify supplemental information regarding contingent liabilities, use of one-time monies, revenues for ongoing expenditures, use of ongoing revenues for one-time expenditures, contingent revenues, contributions, long-term commitments, unfunded liabilities, and status of labor negotiations. And I just think this is great language. I think it really clarifies our obligation to specify one-time monies versus ongoing monies. Mm-hmm. And I think that will help make things clearer to people. So mm-hmm. I like that very much. Any other comments on this? We can, if the board doesn't have a problem with this language as it stands, we can go forward and take a vote tonight, or we can bring it back. Jim, I do you have any concerns about this that you'd like to see it brought back? Okay, would somebody like to make a motion on this?
I'll move that we approve the changes to board policy 3100 as presented.
Okay. It's been moved by Mr. Buckman.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Angel. Any other discussion? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 2. Are you presenting this
one
also,
yes.
Mr. Miller?
I don't play. Revision to board policy 3220.1 regarding our lottery funds is really just changes in language. It doesn't change the way we report our lottery funds or the way we spend them. I don't know if you have any questions or comments about this one.
Okay, let me go to the public. Is there anybody that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back. I'm going to go to Mr. Buckman first and then Mr. Quisenberry.
I just have a quick question, Julie. In the very first paragraph, the Board of Education intends to use California State Lottery funds for supplemental and non-reoccurring expenditures. And the word non-reoccurring seems to be the new word in there. Is that state law that's adding that word, or is that board policy or CSBA? Or
this is aligning it with CSBA recommendations. And my guess is because it's not...
I'm glad that we're... In the recommendation that what I'm seeing in this is that we're not going to be spending this money on ongoing things, and it's my recollection that lottery money is spent a year in arrears essentially. So
that
before
is how we, do
we don't spend this year's money, we spend last year's money so that we know how much.
That's correct. Yeah.
And isn't it what about 2% a total of about 1 or 2% of our total budget?
Oh, gosh, I think 1%.
1% of our total budget, yeah. So. Just a sort of a reminder to people that the windfall that was promised with the lottery has certainly not materialized, although right. we're happy to have any money we can.
Right.
I would. The windfall did fall, but it fell for Bally's and the people that wrote the proposition.
<That's right>. Yeah, exactly, the gaming machine people. Is there any other comments from the board on this one? Do we want to go ahead and take a vote on this as well? Okay, I'd take a motion on this, please. Been moved by Mr. Quisenberry.
Seconded
by Mr. Angel. Is there any further discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 3.
Here we go again. Okay. And this is board policy 3314.2, which has to do with our revolving funds. And again, it's just adding and revising language to align it with CSBA recommendations. I don't think there's really anything new in here. I know that the board takes its fiduciary responsibility to effectively manage and safeguard district's assets and resources very, very, sorry, I lost my train of thought. Seriously, thank you. section on the alternative revolving cash has to do with the petty cash funds that go to the sites and the departments. And we've been doing that for years, and it's just a small amount of funds that go there, and we collect them at the end of the year. So any questions or comments on this board policy?
Let me go to the public first to see if there's anybody that wants to address the board on this item. And seeing no one, I'll go to Mr. Quisenberry first and then back to Mr. Buckman and then Mr. Angel.
Well, you answered part of my question. My other part was in the site-specific funds, does that have anything to do with the funds that the students generate through the ASB, the Associate Student?
One of the issues we had in past audits, although it's been rectified, was concern about how those student funds were being handled, and mm-hmm. so, yeah. Is there any further discussion on this item? Okay, would you guys, shall we take a vote on this one as well? Okay. I'll take a motion on it.
I'll move approval of the changes to board policy 3314.2.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mrs. Roger. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on then to item number 4, Baywood Elementary School Relocatable Classroom Installation Project Environmental Determination. Mr. Guy.
Thank you, and I'll need a pointer. Good evening, Board. I have both items 4 and 5, which have some redundancy. And if I can, I would like to... Can you hear me? All right. I'd like to combine them for discussion purposes, recognizing that they are both separate. If that's okay by you? All right. Just a review. This is Baywood Elementary. Our portable project has trimmed down a bit to a single portable located where it was designed for a future in 1997. There's actually capacity for 2 more portables in this location. We're moving forward with just 1 portable now to allow for the movement of an SDC class into an existing building, which is about right there, and displace the 6th grade class into the new relocatable location. If we could go to C.L. Smith. We have 2 portables in this location that are new, and we are displacing 1 from this location to this location. This is going to be a kindergarten class, and this is going to be a primary grade class. It's an expansion-related change. Currently, they're housing a kindergarten class in this one classroom up here. It's a first grade classroom, and they need space for growth. It's also a site that will take on a given year. I'm asking for the board to accept my recommendation to approve the findings of the preliminary environmental assessment and make the determination that the project qualifies for the categorical exemption class 14 minor additions to schools, which, to briefly recap, would be an increase in capacity for students of up to 25% of existing or no more than 10 classrooms. We are categorically exempt. It's a determination made through legislature that it has no environmental impact. And authorize the superintendent or his designee to file the necessary documents. Any questions regarding the projects?
Okay. Let me go to the public first and see if there's anyone from the public that would like to address on either item number 4 or item number 5. And seeing no one, I'll go with Mrs. Sheffer first, and then Mr. Quisenberry and Mr. Buckman.
Jeff, I just have a question about the growth attributable to the pre-K programs that we have, I know, at C.L. Smith. Are those expected to grow as well, the student population?
Currently, we have a preschool program, if you will, at C.L. Smith with our parent participation program. We also have, I believe, preschool special ed. We look to expand that with time. We have capacity for shrinking and swelling a bit with these 2 new portables. The preschool is expected for 2012, transitional kindergarten.
Right.
So that's on a determination basis.
Okay, so you think that what you're doing now will last into the future for a bit with the addition of these portables?
It will certainly help. Additionally, we are anticipating putting portables here in the future where we can draw from utilities, drainage, et cetera, and also utilize the existing play space that's there if we're to expand further with preschool demands. We'll see how the movement is.
And would that, if you expand back that way, will it affect the availability of the fields for the students and the...
No. Okay, all right. And then we approved a portable in a previous board meeting for the Baywood site.
The purchase of
the purchase of a
correct.
Portable. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that is that going to be on one of those? Is that part of the five or part of the?
That's this one right there.
Okay.
That's the 24 by 40.
Okay.
It's a very simple building, no bathroom, just a sink and space.
Thank you.
Regular classrooms type.
Yeah, hi, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that you've already thought of this, but let me ask this question. If we go back to C.L. Smith, and in the lower, my lower left, that's the new, it's going to be the kindergarten.
Kindergarten is right here.
Right.
It's a 36 by 40 building.
And when you're moving?
The existing kindergarten buildings are right there. There are two.
And you're moving.
And then they will share the space all together. We'll expand the play area. This portable that was moved to here is Sun and Fun.
Sun and Fun.
And it will share space in a sense with the STAR program.
Okay.
So it makes for a nice unit area.
Okay, so the ball field is there? Is that what I'm seeing?
Ball field is here, and there's also one in this lower corner.
All right, and the... I know that AYSO has had a structure there. Is that going to be removed?
There's a shed here. There's a shed there. This shed...
Sounds like the three pigs.
What's that? Oh, here shed, there shed. the sheds are mobile.
Okay.
You know, it's really not an obstacle.
Okay.
We will work with what we have to do to make that functional for the site.
And in the bad old days at AYSO, this is where the kids would test their shoes for water security and play in the mud. Is this,
it's not so muddy at this time.
Okay.
Okay. There's turf irrigation. It's usable space.
Okay. And all the hookups and everything are there.
There's hookups to this one now. We can tie into what goes to this location here for sewer and water, which was brought over here just last year,
okay.
or 2 years ago. And we also have spare conduit that was brought over for electrical and data. And
which is where all the water has gone. No,
yeah, probably. And no, actually it hasn't. I checked. And we also have a garden that will be displaced to this corner, and we're working with the site faculty that are very excited about changes.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Any other comments from board for a categorical exemption? Is there anybody that would like to make that motion?
I'll move approval of item 4 as presented.
Anybody would like to second that?
Second.
Seconded. The motion was made by Mrs. Rogers, seconded by Mr. Angel. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move then to item number 5.
Thank you.
Is there? Well, we've got to do item number 5 still, Jeff.
Oh, well,
you can go, but
no,
taking
stand.
A chance.
Wouldn't miss this.
Is there anybody that would like to make a motion on item number 5?
I'll move to accept approval of item 5 as presented.
Okay. It's been moved by Mrs. Sheffer and seconded by Mr. Buckman. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Carries 6-0. Thank you very much, Jeff.
That being said, I'll move on.
Okay. Let's move on then to item number 6. And this is these are the SMART goals. To support the initiatives for student success, Dr. Prater.
Good evening, board. Just to frame out this presentation, I will give, basically I will characterize and frame out the SMART goal conversation with a rationale, and then Mr. Robinette will come up and speak to you about the three different parts of each of the SMART goals. There's the SMART goal itself that's been annualized from the adopted initiatives, then there's the programmatic implications, and then there's the budgetary implications, and he'll speak to each of those three things rather swiftly and then allow each of you a chance at following each initiative to ask questions or respond. Okay? But first, I'd like to frame it out. As the school year begins to draw to a close, it is report card season. Students and parents anticipate with mixtures of joy and trepidation what those marks will be. As we begin the process of adopting measurable goals for our district and aligning valuable monetary resources towards these goals, I'd like to give you my own assessment, my report card of San Luis Coastal. We call report cards progress reports these days because by design they just don't tell us how we're doing, but where we need to go. Whereas with the same demographics as us, we don't look so good. The question is, why? The Nonprofit Education Trust just published a report that is based on four simple but important criteria. One, student performance as measured by standardized exams. Two, improvement over the last 5 years on those exams. Three, the achievement gaps existing between low-income students, students of color, and white students. And four, the level of college readiness, completion of the A through G requirements to get into the UCCSU. They took those four criteria and they scored and placed on a report card the 146 unified school districts with more than 5,000 students in California. San Luis Coastal received a D mark. In other words, we were 141 out of 146 in the state of California, according to these criteria. We actually were reported to have been failing in the areas of improvement for low-income students and failing in the achievement gap between Latino children and our white subgroup students. No doubt we have serious work to do. There are districts like ours who are doing much better with fewer resources than we have. Our initiatives for student success and the goals associated will tend to that important work. Under the subject school climate, we have much reason for pride. In this season of open houses and end-of-the-year celebrations like this evening, it is apparent that having small neighborhood schools with dedicated teachers, staff, leaders, and volunteers is no doubt a community treasure. But the demands of an increasingly complex set of circumstances are putting heavy pressure on this school culture. Homelessness, growth of EL families, unemployment, bullying behavior, truancy, and special education demands land at our schoolhouse doors each day. It is our obligation and ultimately our privilege as public educators to bolster the supports needed for our community to maintain that positive culture. Our initiatives address these things. We realize now, more than ever before, our need to develop partnerships with community and business organizations and meld our efforts toward the common purpose of supporting our children and their families. But impasses aren't really about objective measures. They are rooted in trust, in a lack of team spirit and unity. I, as superintendent, take full responsibility for this. And I would hope that the SLCTA would also. We don't have this trust issue with our other bargaining units. Our initiatives for student success have specific goals toward achieving better bargaining protocols, and we have made every attempt to ground our future work right down to the classroom floor where it makes the most difference, the work that teachers do every day. For the subject fiscal policy, our board deserves, in my opinion, an A. San Luis Coastal has managed to maintain salary schedules that keep us at or near the top every year. We have a reserve for economic uncertainty that will help us weather the storms that have forced other districts into massive layoffs and furloughs and cut valuable programs. We have come close to completely funding our post-retirement benefits for employees so that there is safety and health benefits, their safety and health benefits will continue as promised in our contracts. We have maintained employment at a time when unemployment is at near record levels, and we have placed our money into student programs where it belongs. Being wise stewards of the taxpayers' dollars is a mandate. This board should be proud of its efforts. The board is going to be asked to spend a portion of our unallocated reserves and leftover jobs bill money towards our initiatives to support student success. You will be asked to consider allocating more resources toward classroom supports, instructional coaching, clerical assistance, extra teacher sections at our secondary schools, interventions for struggling students, new commitments toward accelerated learning opportunities, and college career pathways in our high schools. I believe it is a commitment that is timely and will, over time, give us the grades on our progress report that our community and our children deserve. I would like our future progress reports to be based on a dynamic construct that looks like this: strategic plan initiatives for student success. This document contains SMART goals, that is, goals that can be attained, measured, and for which we can hold ourselves accountable. We have attached plans and resources to these goals. Our budget development work over the next two meetings will be directly tied to these goals. District leaders and school boards manage the levers of level seems more positive for public education than was originally thought. The legislature weighing in on the governor's proposal and the possibility of a ballot initiative will determine how good or bad that news really is. We will still give back over $4 million. We have been honoring some fantastic employees. We have been highlighting achievements of specific students doing incredible things at the state and national levels. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of scholarship money will be handed out over the next month to our graduates. We will be entering a fact-finding process that we hope yields an acceptable settlement with our teachers. And most importantly, we will be asking the board to adopt a budget that will guarantee success for our students. One of the most significant events, though, may be the English Language Advisory Committee meeting held last week at Pacheco Elementary. Because it is a symbolic, it is symbolic of our direction. Hundreds of Latino families came together at the request of Principal Rick Mayfield and teachers of the school. A mutual commitment was made. Parents, grandparents, and siblings pledged to push their students toward high academic achievement, while the school promised to embrace their children under the banner "All means all" when it comes to providing the best possible education to their children. This is our corporate mission, and I say carpe diem, or seize the day, for now is our time to act.
Thank you, Dr. Prater.
Well, I'm going to attempt to, in a highly Reader's Digest version, go through these initiatives because I understand and I know that Dr. Prater had the opportunity to speak to all of the board members about them and have you take a look at them. But first of all, I need to acknowledge some very good work that has been put into this document. Rita Delkiskamp, Jackie Kirk-Martinez, Amelia Samoes, and Amy Shields spent hours creating goals and program actions that are aligned to each of our initiatives for student success. They spent weekends working on this. Julie Lang and her team spent time placing dollar values to the human and other resources that will be anticipated to take these actions. So it's quite a team that has worked very hard on this. And I'll probably be asking them to field questions you might have also. Our attempt here is very straightforward. We want to create attainable, specific goals for the next year in each of the 10 areas that are part of our initiatives for student success. So they are modest in some areas by design. We want to get achievement brought before the board in the fall from each of our school sites. You will see a correlation between these district plans and those site plans. Alignment between our district budget priorities and site-funded priorities. We are focusing our sites on what matters most. So I will go very briefly through each one, highlighting the general goals, programs, and budget, and allow for questions after each of the 10 initiatives. This is a draft, so it's very important that your input and questions and concerns are given to us so we can develop this into a plan and into a budget, because we're looking to develop a budget at the next meeting and budget recommendations for next year. So Kim will try to kind of keep up with me maybe. But initiative one is basically we are focusing our efforts on making substantial gains with English learners, students who are socioeconomically disadvantaged, homeless foster youth, special education students and those students most needing targeted interventions. Those are what the goals are all about, and there's measurements for each one of those goals. If you look at the actual implementation, which I think is probably the next page, Kim, what you will see is that our design, the district actions, which will be aligned to school actions, will increase administrative and coaching support in classrooms, the breakthrough coaching model we've been employing. They will provide extra clerical support at the sites, teachers on special assignments who in many ways become adjunct faculty to our sites. You will see intervention in the form of additional teachers at each of our elementary school, one additional full-time equivalent at each elementary school for the purpose of intervention. Additional program specialists, summer planning teams made up of teachers and administrators to work on goals, a targeted summer school, secondary sections for specific subjects, additional EL aides, additional EL specialists, and professional development. And if you look at the next page, you'll see the price tag for this is $1.7 million. This is mostly, as you can see from the budget outlay, in increased employment to serve these purposes. So I can entertain questions or comments about Initiative 1, and I guess we'll just move that way if that serves the board best.
Thank you. I had noted here a question under district site and summer schools, some summer school transportation, and then the beefing up of the summer school programs and offerings.
Intervention program. Am I characterizing that okay?
Okay. So with our youngers, there is no parent-teacher conference on the third marking period. But at some point towards the end of school, when I say youngers, I guess I mean our elementary students, that parents would be contacted?
It's done at the end of second trimester parent-teacher conference. And by then we have the summer school forms with us and say, you know, sign up
Okay, and thank you. So that's at the elementary level. Then middle and high school, does a forum go home? Is there or is the counselor? Is the student called
in
to
speak
with the counselor?
Yeah, it's the same thing. Largely this is for students who are failing subjects, so it's a pretty easy intervention. There's students who are not being successful where they are at the secondary level, and it's the same thing. We're looking at counselor, teacher, administrator, referral to summer school as a means of catching up. The interesting thing about summer school is that we really want, you know, part of the design of this is to develop the right curriculum for summer school, and yeah. so that we are really using that time frame as an extended school year activity that has targeted intervention and not just, you know, doing summer school, which has great value as it is. We believe we can get even more bang from our buck.
But we're double dosing.
Yes.
Okay. And we will have one elementary program on the coast and one secondary program on the coast and the same in town?
I believe the funding for this is to keep, yeah, maybe Gray can talk better, but I think the funding level of this is to keep our same commitment, which would be exactly what you say, one on the coast, one on the city, making sure we have secondary supports. And then we've also had some individual school sites doing with their own funding their own programs.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman.
Well, that's the exciting thing that is evolving, is we have traditionally done it, as you've said, with one site on each end of the district. And what's happened over the last several years is we've had a proliferation of what we euphemistically call the boutiques, which is the individual schools that have come forward and said, we can serve our kids best at our school with our teachers and our material. Can we get the blessing to do that? And like I say, that number is expanding pretty dramatically. So schools have recognized that they are the prime mover in having students experience success during that. And that difference times 12 accounts for a huge difference over the course of their education. And as Dr. Prater and Rick have said, this district has been able to continue to maintain a summer school and is now putting even more concentrated focus on putting the students that need it into an extended time, not an optional time, but a highly, highly recommended time.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosenberg, continue. Yeah, I have a couple of quick questions here on page 6.3. In regards to the additional expenditures for interventions, that would be interventions in math and reading, and those would be in addition to students that will be enrolled in a math class, and this would be an additional period or a portion of a period. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then likewise with reading.
Correct.
Is it our intention that to make those classes available just for EL students or for any student that's struggling in their English class or their math class?
Yeah, the additional sections that we're proposing giving to the secondary schools for this coming year, both our middle schools and our high schools, is really to be determined by design by the sites. We really want to give them to the site leadership to figure out where it makes most sense. But the idea is to identify specific students, whatever category, EL, special ed, homeless, you know, because all of these initiatives are focused on specific subgroups, and get those students into those, in some ways, sometimes double dip types of classes, or in other ways, just a separate targeted standalone, like a reading intervention class.
We currently have some of these classes on board. At least I know it at the high school level. I assume also at the middle school. Mm-hmm. So, are you anticipating this 12 sections in addition to what we're currently doing, or just 12 total?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it all is in addition.
It's in addition, okay. And then regarding the clerical staffing, clerical support, mm-hmm. It says 6.25 or 6 1/4 full-time equivalents. Is that in terms of additional hours?
7 1/4 hours of secretary clerk time to each of the elementary sites, so that essentially there is a secretary clerk there while the students are there. So the school secretary is freed up. And part of this design is to support the office staff and get our principals into classrooms to support these initiatives. So it's all tied in with that.
Mr. Buckman?
Thank you. Obviously, a tremendous amount of work. Did you bring your pillows? Because I have some questions on Initiative 1. We were going to be talking about specific student populations. We had identified 1, 2, 3, 4 about 5 specific populations, and they're not specifically pulled out in each of these direct district actions. Is the intent then that the homeless and the SEDs are just commingled within these in the district actions on the left?
So you're looking back at the SMART goal and the specifics, and where are they within?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So there's targeted interventions, the extra sections, the teachers on special assignment devoted. Yeah, it's a combination of all those.
Okay, great. On the earlier ones that Mr. Quisenberry was talking about, at the top of 6.3 in the upper right, 12 secondary interventions, are those pull-out programs or are those within the classrooms? We're not going to... Are we doing more pull-out programs?
These are credit classes.
Gotcha. Okay. When we look at the 6.4 and we start looking at the budget, one of the concerns I had was a question, and now it's a bigger question. You've identified for Mr. Quisenberry the 6.25 clerical support as being hours. Mm-hmm. These same number shows up repeatedly with a $0 amount.
Correct.
In other initiatives.
Correct. So what we want to do is make sure we're not, you know, repeating things twice within our budget. So you're going to find that in many of these areas,
right,
we're not trying to budget them twice. We're attaching these to different initiatives.
Okay. And it has also another effect, though. It also
you guys put into it, and I'm
pleased to see you're adding more teaching staff. The 9 elementary certificated positions, just one per elementary side, is that
yes.
To lower class size numbers?
No. The intent is not as a class size reduction. The intent is for each of the leaders at the school site with their management teams to determine where that full-time equivalent is best utilized at the school. For example, I was talking to Dr. Schoolis today at Monarch Grove. He's looking at a combination of several part-time positions to do actual intervention work as part of that. I'm sure there are other schools who may be looking at it as, you know, half-time assignments here or there, or if their goals need to be solely focused on EL learners, it might be to increase that. If it needs to be focused on math achievement, maybe something in that regard. So we're really, the attempt here is to take some district resources, get it to the sites where they know how to best use it, and through their own single plans for student achievement to use those resources.
And then back to the intervention sections. So those will be taken in lieu of, call them mandatory electives, I guess. Is that?
Perhaps. You know, what we've done some experimenting with it, for example, Los Osos Middle School is some 0-period, 7-period classes. It may not be in lieu of. It may be in addition to. Kind of depends on how the schedule works out. There's a lot of creative stuff that you can do with you know, classes that you go into but then come back out of into another program, so you're not locked into a program for an entire trimester, semester, quarter, whatever. So again, we'll be working with the school sites to determine how best to utilize those.
I totally appreciate that. You hate to lock kids into just math and science all day and not get the chance to explore, especially in the middle
levels.
Kind
of defeats the purpose sometimes of what we're doing.
But it's, you know, it's such a delicate balance. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about what Mr. Angel is saying. I don't know if this would affect students' graduation requirements and the number of units that they would be taking and where that might fall. Hopefully our students are achieving their A to G requirements. So how something like this might affect it, I think that's something that I would ask you guys to also be aware of and look at.
I think it's a really good point for us to look into as we develop, because we'll be bringing, I'm anticipating bringing new course offerings and things like that, and we'll need to, I think, look at it in the whole framework of.
And then upper grade math, can they use that for like 2 half times?
Oh, I hope
or
so.
Shift
that's
around
the
and
idea.
Share with other sites.
Absolutely.
And kind of collaborate mm-hmm. to make the most of.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm quite certain our elementary
so
principals
are
working behind the scenes frantically and creatively trying to figure out how to make this work.
Yeah, well, I really support that yeah. creative, the ability to creatively use that to address student needs. So, thank you.
Because we realize even with these district goals of, you know, achieving a certain percentage point, schools are in different places. There are schools who have achieved it. And so they need to be targeting their work, their intervention into other areas. And so we need to, you know, support that.
One more question. So the 9 teachers, back to that again. That's similar to something that, like Lucia Marr, I think they are doing that with some of their jobs bill money, bringing teachers in. Is that similar to that?
No, I don't know.
Don't
we
know.
Have a Lucia Marr guy here. I don't know.
I don't know. He's a high school guy, though, an
yeah.
Eagle.
Ugh. You know anything. I'm not sure what they were doing. On to initiative 2.
Procedural question.
Did you wish to address the board?
Well, I don't know how that works. Do we, as a public, wait like on previous items until the whole item's over and then, or at each one? Or is there a place for public comments at all?
What I would prefer is, I think, if you can hold your comments until we get through all of them, that would be helpful, because if you feel so moved to do that, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay, initiative 2 is targeting a measurable reduction in truancy, increasing a culture of care through advocacy at our sites, increasing our reach of primarily Spanish-speaking employees to connect with our community, and making a larger commitment to counseling and guidance is kind of where the actual SMART goals are going. So what you're going to see in the program implementation is the need to forge some multi-agency connections, better truancy tracking and homeschool connections. You'll see a major investment in elementary counseling by the district, professional development, and the whole culture of care component, which is what the overall strategic initiative is about, a reorganization of our student support services department, and in this age of cyberbullying.
Where is the school resource officer on the coast? Could you just answer that as you did before?
Well, we're not sure yet. We are actually, we had a good meeting with Mayor Yates and Andrea Luker, the manager of Morro Bay, and discussing the their desire to see us add a school resource officer, and we're waiting to see kind of what that price tag might look like. We need to determine, you know, how much of a full-time equivalent we would want to put into this, if at all, based on that and based on the school's desires and needs. But we'd like to achieve equity with San Luis Obispo, where we do have a full-time school resource officer. We have not had a school resource officer at Morro Bay for many years because it hasn't been funded. School resource officer at SLO High has been funded by SLO PD. It hasn't been funded by the Morro Bay Police Department or the Sheriff's Department. And we have to realize, too, two-thirds of the students at Morro Bay High School are Los Osos residents under Sheriff's jurisdiction. So there's a few other issues that need to be worked out there, but we are working on it.
So we would take the school's desire into consideration, whether or not they feel
it's pretty important. Need. Pretty important consideration,
yeah,
I would think.
I think so. Okay, thank you. And then I just had one other question.
Okay, can I just follow up on that?
Oh, too? Sure.
So are you also in discussions with the sheriff about this? Since all the schools in Los Osos are under the sheriff's jurisdiction?
Yeah, and what's what we've talked with Chief Parkinson is the keeping a resource officer who has been their DARE officer in the Los Osos area. So serving the Monarch Grove, Baywood, Los Osos Middle School community. Not necessarily doing DARE education, but serving as a resource officer, which is what Susie has mostly been doing at the middle school level.
Officer Korea?
Yeah.
Okay, and then I just, you piggyback, but I just, let me finish up here. I had noted under the, let's see, proposed additional expenditures, it says a safe data system initiated by the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education, and then a parenthetical, district's fiscal impact unknown. By that I wrote, what? Question mark?
Yeah, I'm going to need help with this one. I know what they're talking about, but I don't know about the unknown part. This is maybe Amelia? Yeah.
I just didn't know what the whole meant.
I think she can handle this one.
Okay.
Correct, and then we can share the data with other districts. So we're not sure what that cost is going to be. It's in its initial stages, so this is kind of a placeholder at this time.
Would we be sharing confidential student information?
With just the educators involved with those students. So if that student is now in Lucy Amar, used to be a San Luis Coastal, then that data would be shared, just like it would be if it was in a hard copy format for the CUME folder. It's now electronically available.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You know, I was going to say, with the board's permission, I think what I'd like to do is, thinking about what Mr. Buck Moyer was asking, I think as soon as the staff makes their portion of the presentation, I will invite members of the public to come up before we take board comment on them. Okay. So, Mr. Buckmore, that said, would you like to come up and comment on that?
I just had a question about
absolutely.
The lowering of class size on your.
Which can you direct us to what page you're looking at?
The big money one. What was it?
Big money.
Big money.
Show us that.
Oh, I get you. Initiative one. So one of the goals was on the left side, district action, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down, reduce class size, staffing ratio in regular education classrooms. So I noticed is that for high school or just elementary school?
No, this is relative to special education. And the specific one, it has to do with the, right, you're saying reduce class size, who are enrolled in special day classes. So this is a specific special education one having to do largely with mainstream students into regular education classrooms and taking account of that impact.
So you want to reduce the ratio in a regular education classroom
of students,
in my classroom?
Right, of students who are being mainstreamed.
Right, so that I'll have less regular kids, so it makes me more capable of dealing with an increase of mainstreamed kids. Do I understand that right or no?
Yeah.
Okay, so if that's happening, then on the budget implications section, I just think maybe we've missed an estimated cost there somewhere, because the shadowing, the 12 secondary intervention sections, the shadowing sections, there's some money for that, and then the interventions for the
if you look on
the nine,
I'm sorry,
the nine sections,
four spots down, four, you'll see an increase.
Rick, when you were talking about this, I thought I heard you say something about a special emphasis on EL students. And is that part of what you were thinking was?
Well, we had an emphasis on looking for employment that is bilingual as a way of connecting with our community better.
Okay, I don't know where to start. Fairly shocked when we got back. Comments on the surveys on our initiatives by the amount of racism and hate that came through in this community.
Yeah.
And so more and more I'm looking at this creative intentional culture of care and taking this one extremely seriously, because I think anything like that is going to just hinder all the rest of these initiatives. So as I look at that, I want to be sure that what I'm seeing here, create culturally competent learning environments. It's on 6.6, the third one down.
Mm-hmm.
And research and pilot. There are two ways that I've seen the district work. And one way is to spend a lot of sort of time creating a committee internally and spending a lot of time. And it seems like sometimes we're creating the wheel again, and then outside, just over the border, 10 miles away, somebody's already wrestled with this and come up with a solution.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see the word research, is that back to the model of committees within the district, or is that a thinking of researching visitation and going outside? And I'm seeing people shaking their heads yes over there. So, okay, that makes me.
I'm guessing it's a good combination of both, and I think that one of the things that we realize as this is my own editorial comment, I suppose, as we work on these initiatives, is that there is no room for a district like ours to be an island and not connect with our business community, with our nonprofit community, and I know this is dear to your heart, Mr. Buckman, with the agencies that are doing very similar things to us as we're doing, and there are curriculums and there are programs that have been developed that are being used in other school districts that we don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Okay.
But there are probably other opportunities and times where, you know, creating something.
Development. Okay.
And but maybe we need to highlight that in some way. It might be a good idea.
You know. Right, and I just
let me see.
For my own well-being, I want to know that the crew that's putting this together and those of us that are going to be voting on this are going to be voting on professional development that addresses
that issue.
Let's see what else. I'm starting to get. As I got to initiative two, I was starting to get concerned about the 6.2 clerical staff, who turns out to be now 6.25 hours.
6.25 hours, okay. Full-time equivalents.
Okay, so now it's spread out over initiative one and two.
And four. It's all over the place.
So I just want to start pointing that out.
Yes.
That this is, these hours are those magical expanding hours. So thank you for that.
Well, it's the same hours.
I know, but they're going to have to be like magic beans here, I think. So I just point that out as a concern that I have. And I appreciate your work on this initiative. Thank you.
Going back to the surveys, talking on truancy, page 6-5, decrease district truancy rate 41% to 36%. A comment was made by several people that this was a political initiative. No, we just want to look good in the newspaper. And I'm going to say this, and I've probably said it before, that's BS. You know, one of the number one indicators of high school dropout is attendance in elementary schools. And so I appreciate the district really taking a hard look. Even though we don't get money per parent told me, meet in the seat, I think it's very important that we have kids in our schools. And having said that, I read an article in the San Luis Obispo High School newspaper that said, Why is no one coming to school? And one of the administrators said, you know, it's triage. I get a list of so many people, and we have to clear all these cuts. How are we going to support this administrators with the triage so we can clear these cuts? And
well, we're not recommending adding more administrators, and we need to track that data. Maybe it's true. I doubt it. We're not proposing adding administrative time.
No, absolutely to our, not.
To the high schools.
Is the clerical going to have? I didn't ask for that, but is the clerical going to be helping?
We've allocated. Or I think where our recommendation is to add clerical support at one of our high schools to assist with that, but not at Slo High. I think Morro Bay High was allocated to have some additional clerical support.
If I could interject,
so maybe some coaching then.
Yeah, if I could interject on that, on truancy, I believe that we're going about it incorrectly. I was one of those VPs once that did the triage work. I remember it well. The antecedent of truancy is a lack of connection to the school, a lack of connection by the student, a lack of connection by the family, a lack of connection by the employees. And so what we really need to do, and this is why it's in this initiative, is we have to evaluate the antecedent for truancy and go after that, which in my view is a team effort, an outreach to parents, making school important to kids. And we do that by communicating our expectations and really as a whole unit, reaching out and saying, if you're not here, if you're not in the seats, we pull the fire alarm, so to speak. We won't accept this. And it's going to take a lot of a collective energy. It's not on any one person's shoulder. It's on the whole team. And parents need to own up to this as well. And I don't think, I personally don't think that the approach of, how we're trying to handle truancy is the right path at all. I think we have to turn it on its head and do something differently, and this is what this is about.
And then just again, another plug for a web program for especially our middle schools. Web is where everybody belongs. It's there's six elementary schools feeding into Laguna, seven elementary schools feeding into Laguna, two elementary schools feeding into Los Osos Middle School, three elementary schools.
Oh, man, excuse me.
And so something like a web program would be.
Yeah, web and link, and there's some tremendous, excellent programs out there.
More important for middle than high at this point, but okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry. I want to be clear about that. Chris, can I ask one other question?
Sure.
Okay, I'm sorry. As we go through this, is there going to be another opportunity for us to have this kind of specific interaction with staff, or is this before this comes back as budget proposals?
Yeah, I would welcome the opportunity to sit with each of you again and we'll bring it back to our next board meeting as well.
Thanks.
On that line, are we going to encourage comments by teachers and so forth relative to what is here, questions and so forth? And will this, and parents, of course, yes.
you know,
is this going to be posted, let's say, for example, on the website or?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
We've sent it to the principals for them to evaluate, give us feedback on, and basically this is our first blush to look through this. When you look at the timeline, you know, it's just, okay. It's becoming really challenging across the board for everybody right now. So,
number three, okay, initiative three. This one, you know, I've been in education for 29 years. This is one of the most exciting things I've come across, is the idea of adding preschool for those students who are not accessing it. So this initiative really is about getting started on preschool and transitional K. Transitional K is the program that will become mandated by the state to start those students who have been going to kindergarten at a very young age, getting them into essentially a two-year kindergarten program. And the intent of this is for those families who are not accessing preschool currently, either through subsidized preschool or through private preschool. We're moving fast in some areas, so you know the board has been very active in some of the infrastructure aspects of this, but we're slow and steady in some others that have to do with program and staffing issues and credentialing and access and getting the word out and where we're going to be putting things and how it's going to be designed. But the idea here is to get started and to get a couple of transitional K programs and ideally four preschools by year's end, if not by the middle part of the year. So that's kind of where we're shooting. About $800,000, two-thirds of that is on the infrastructure, the playgrounds, the buildings, the portables. But we do anticipate that the ongoing costs, again, not knowing kind of where the design ends up falling, are these going to be all-day preschools, half-day preschools, how's it going to be designed, will there be the ability for parents to pay as opposed to a free preschool for those who need it most. So there's a lot of issues that we need to figure out. But we do anticipate this is probably a $400,000 to $500,000 ongoing cost. But there's a lot of things we have to develop in this area. But it's here because we want to get started. We want to get started on this. We believe this is going to make a significant difference in the achievement gap.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this one? Okay, we'll bring it back to the board. One thing I did want to note that I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the 6,000 line, $784,000. I'm thinking that a lot of that money will be from developer fees and other things.
I know Russell's not feeling well and had to leave early, but I think it's entirely out of developer fees. This is not general fund dollars, okay, that portion.
Mrs. Sheffer and then Mr. Buckman.
Rick, I'm with you on this. I think that education is built on building blocks, and the sooner we can start laying the foundation and equitably so. We have so many kids starting out in kindergarten with the achievement gap already in place.
It is.
And I think this opportunity to narrow that early on, right at the start, is going to be so important in proceeding through all the goals. And it's one of the, once this is in place, I think doing something you love to do, which is following the data that we accumulate through this, is going to be really an interesting adventure to see what our kids really see, what all have the opportunity to see, what all our kids are capable of. And this is very exciting. And I just want to add that I know that we all know this already, but with indicating whether this will come back for additional public comment, whether the opportunity for input from teachers, staff, everyone out there, I would just encourage the two people who might be watching this on television, as well as people who in the community, that we always welcome input and the opportunity.
Size chunks, so it's June 2012 as opposed to now through the rest of the 97%
right.
increases, so it's really making this much easier to digest. I'm looking at 6.8 district actions to support development of preschools. And in the first box under proposed additional expenditures, on the right, I'm seeing some very specific things like the 6.5 hours and the 3.5 FTE. Mm-hmm. But then I come down to bilingual community liaison. And I'm looking here, and then I'm looking in the budget. The budget's got $1,000 for something called
bilingual staff.
Bilingual staff, which is actually later on in this. So I'm assuming there's going to be some more effort put in, or not, some more thought.
And then we have a
sorry, thank you.
In a 5,000 account, which would be additional.
Thank you. And even as I looked at the 5,000, if we're going to try to attract families that we traditionally have trouble communicating and making outreach to, I'm concerned that 5,000 is a fairly small amount. Also, I'm looking at the next item down, printing costs. This is part of publicizing and recruit students and families. Printing costs, publication, outreach, and translation costs. The age of the parents that we're going to be trying to reach are younger than X and Y and millennia and whatever the new group is, and I'm worried about. Let me see, how do I phrase this?
Different modes of getting the word out.
I'm hoping that we're also thinking about Facebook and Twitter and social networking, and ways that we haven't even thought about that'll be available by the end of this summer. Because these families may not even, the reason that Telegram Tribune's online now is because of this. So I would urge that we look at some of the newer technology that's out there to outreach to these families.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jim?
Well, Mark sort of hit on a couple of things. The bilingual community liaison is my concern is the amount of money allocated there and the fact that
resources I'm hearing is a possibility there.
Well, especially if this could be tied also to the attendance issues too. It's important that we contact these parents with someone who can explain the importance of their student being in class, and clarify why they're not there. And there's some anecdotal information that you could probably get from Morrowbie High School when that was done.
Yes,
it changed a lot of things. And then the last thing is
the person who did it too.
Right, I know the person who did it personally, but it's only anecdotal. And the other thing is the account clerk, and I see that that's going to be. That person is going to deal with other of the SMART goals. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And that this 36,000 will appear only here and not in goals five or goals.
No, that
five,
would,
seven, and ten.
That's pretty close to the overall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty close. All right. Thank you.
The benefits are below, so that's probably salary. Yeah. Pretty accurate.
Number four.
Okay, good. All right. Number four, initiative four. There are modest increases, and this is our initiative on English language arts, and there are modest increases in the K-2 reading. This is an area where we've already seen substantial gains, actually, through our comprehensive literacy program. We're adding a writing component to that and focus attention on the upper elementary and the secondary reading programs through more targeted intervention. So when you look at the programmatic implications, you're seeing a continuing work on comprehensive literacy and that support, adding that writing component and additional sections primarily and some curriculum support. It's yet to be determined at the upper grade and secondary levels. Our price tag is about $322,000. It's largely teachers on special assignment, adding one at both or increasing it at the elementary level and adding one at the secondary level, and books, technology, curriculum, professional development.
Comments from the public on number four? Mr. Bedrigan.
Just a Bruce Pedregian, President of San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Just an observation here on I'm getting more concerned about the TOSAs of teachers on special assignment as that continues to grow. You know, those teachers are replaced by temporary teachers who stay on temporary. The idea of a teacher on special assignment, I thought, was a great idea. Thought that that idea of having a teacher on special assignment to bring someone who is closest to the situation to the students, bring in their expertise to work together with administrators, students suffer. I want to keep that in mind. And also, the other thing that bothers me a little bit about these SMART goals is that it's, you know, where are the teachers? Rick mentioned all hit the great team, and they're all, wonderful people. Where are the teachers that were in on having a word in on these when these were being developed? Because otherwise it sounds top-down to me. I'm kind of disappointed in that.
Thank you. Comments from the board? Mark.
Yep, sorry. My only comment right now on Initiative 4 would be to reiterate to go out and find best practices that it may, and then modify those to fit our district needs. But also on 6.10 in the left-hand column, articulate a complete K-12 ELA program, including current, and then propose additional expenditures of laptops and desktops. I'm okay with movies, but and library books, and we're going to get to the classroom of the future. And I'm concerned about the value of laptops and desktops mm-hmm. in the near future. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that we're looking out as far as we can.
Sure.
In terms of technology.
Okay.
Point well taken.
Are we going to look, as we go through this process, because sort of segueing or following on Mark's comments, the high-interest leveled books, a couple of years ago we had some additional money, at least at Morrilby High, and I'm sure that it happened at a lot of sites where we spent a lot of money in purchasing books for the library and so forth. So I see someone shaking their head over there, but I don't know if that came down to the elementary level or not. But a lot of those materials exist, and I wonder if we're going to look at kind of cataloging them, inventorying them, and seeing what is and what exists, and then work going from there.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you. Number five, especially as students reach Algebra 1 at the 8th grade level. Our goals will include adding, again, teachers on special assignment, grounded largely at the sites, because we believe that's where their focus needs to be. Our schools will likely be devoting much of their extra full-time equivalents in Initiative 1 to this focus, and we anticipate some serious professional development. We are increasing math employment in the district. We're actually currently seeking to fill 3 positions, so that's kind of exciting, getting some new math teachers into the school district at the secondary level. And also, part of this will begin the conversations about the alignment of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, or perhaps STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. So as far as the programmatic implications, we're adding 2 teachers on special assignments to increase our efficacy in the math program, professional development, and a slow move from math to STEM. I mean, we really just need to kind of nail down math before we get too involved in everything else, although there's a lot of proponents saying, you know, the best way to teach mathematics is through science. And so we have to look at all those factors. But at this point, our price tag is $780,000, and that is largely in the area of professional development and those teachers on special assignment. Anyone from the public? Okay, board members. Mrs. Sheffer and then Mr. Buckman.
I would just say I love seeing the professional development in this. I think it's really important, and I would hope that at the secondary level, that teachers other than math teachers be, however this works, and I'm sure it will happen, but encourage teachers from other disciplines as well as math, learn how to incorporate mathematics into their curriculum to reach students who may walk in the classroom or the math class already thinking, this is not where I'm, you know, I want to be. So can slide it in wherever possible. So I think I love the professional development in this. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I think that first piggyback on Ellen's comment on professional development, and as I go through, or as I went through these and noticed the number of classroom aides and support staff, and really wonder whether the group was thinking in terms of the support staff and the aides attending the same professional development. So on this one, the thought that came to mind, because math was something that my accountant is still doing for me, I'm hoping that we're thinking about pushing outside the box a little bit, some online classes, some online help, 24-hour help, or some interactive stuff on Facebook. Facebook does have some protections now that you can get for a school district. It's facebook.net, so they can't get to each other's little pages, but they can strong interaction with teachers on a regular basis. And I know that in this one, if I had somebody to go to after school and got help, I could probably do percentages, which I don't do really well. But this may be, and in other places where online stuff starts to become really handy. I'd also like to take the opportunity right now to also mention textbooks and digital textbooks, and I didn't see that, or I missed it in here.
Yeah, and
I'm hoping that's another consideration.
Yeah, in our classroom of the future, I think we have a whole section on e-books and.
Is that what e-books were?
Yes, textbooks.
Sorry, I missed that.
Partially.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I thought those were the ones I bought from Kindle.
Okay, still.
I know it's getting late, so I'll just quickly mention one of the programs I saw in the Central Valley was something called Math on Call, where there was like our Channel 20 or 21, 19, there was homework help, and you could actually call in, and people who had cable could sit down and watch and get math help.
We have a similar thing through our ETC portal, I believe, that has some of that, I believe. Am I wrong on that? I think so.
There's some mathematics.
Yeah.
I'll have to get my password out again. Okay, yep. Thanks.
On to six, okay.
Number six, please.
Initiative six has to do with accelerated and specialized learning opportunities. And you'll notice that in some ways we've stepped back and are seeing this year as a research year in this area because, you know, we're going to be largely immersed in some of these other initiatives. And so we kind of have to figure out where to put our priorities. But the research here is significant, and we do have a measurable goal here to increase our AP exam access. And you'll see in our programmatic implications, it's really a research and visitation year for us. We're not necessarily proposing doing a lot besides looking at some magnet school.
You know what, can you come on up? Because they got to record it.
It's a great goal to have challenging classes for kids. Just ask everybody to stay focused on that there are ways to make a course rigorous and challenging other than to label it as an AP course. And sometimes it seems kind of an easy, you know, we'd like more challenge, so let's put in more AP courses. And I like the idea of more challenge. I think kids, it speaks to your thing. When you're challenged at school, you're engaged in school, you're coming, you're thinking your time is well spent. But there are ways to accomplish that other than just attacking it in an AP frame. Although increasing AP isn't necessarily a negative thing, but just that might not be the first response.
And
so,
thank you. And I think some of the things that we've been reading about is that simply the fact of giving something an AP level doesn't make it a quality course.
Yeah.
And so I think we need to look at quality and then align quality with whatever else we're going to do. Board members, Mr. Buckman.
I'm going to be buying coffee for everybody in the morning. On Initiative 6, I noticed that we did step back, and I think it's going to be a great year of research. As we explore, and it looks like we've got travel expenses in here, I think this would be a tremendous opportunity. And I noticed that there's teacher hourly and substitute pay, so it looks like the teachers were certainly thought of being involved in this, and I appreciate that. This may be a great opportunity because these are some big bites, IB and magnet schools and two-way immersion, to also involve community and parents. Mm-hmm. And so I personally think the dollar amount for this item is too small. Thank you.
Okay, and number 7. This is the data section, the data initiative, and this is why we are able to focus our energy. We need to become more comfortable with engaging all of our professionals in the valuing and analysis of formative and summative data of all types. We know that these high-stakes end-of-year exams that students take are not where the story of our district lies. It is in the regular teacher-created, higher-order thinking assessments that are common. And in the surveys and demographic data that tell us how our students feel and what and how they're engaged in school. So our goals here are to create common benchmarks, to become comfortable with self-analysis and report boldly it's online report cards, online registration, and a price tag of about $130,000. Most of that is ongoing costs, but there's a lot of carryover from other initiatives you see in this one, so it's kind of blended in there with some of the other initiatives.
Anybody from the public? Okay. And before we get to Mr. Angel and Mr. Quisenberry, I just want to say I think it's important not only to inform our parents, students, and teachers, but I think it's really important to inform our community about how our schools are doing and how that we need more transparency. If we're being asked to spend $6 million. I wish it was $600 million. If we're being asked to spend $6 million on something, then I think we have an obligation to the community to demonstrate to them that what we're doing is working.
Yeah.
Mr. Angel and Mr. Quisenberry.
A couple pieces here. I'm really excited to see the common assessments being worked on, and I like the fact that you have a TOSA here. I agree a little bit with Bruce on the TOSA thing. You know, I hate to see people out of the classroom for a long period of time, but I have seen I've been one of those teachers that have worked really hard on common assessments and then had to go in and teach the next day and then go back and work really hard on common assessments. So I think taking that out of the teacher's hands, but putting teachers on a committee to review and come up with common standards is really good, really great. The other thing is, on the surveys, it indicated that we're going to test our kids to death. Something to that effect was in there. And I disagree. I think with our common assessments, it's not going to be more testing. It's going to be targeted testing. And I say targeted because I don't want to wait till August to find out how my kids are doing on the standardized tests, which we are graded on fairly or not. I want to know in October. Then I want to know again in January. You know, I want to know throughout the year. So, for me, this is a non-negotiable, and I really like the work you guys are putting into it.
You know, I just a little quick comment. Last night, I was at Cal Poly doing mock interviews with prospective teachers, just giving them pointers on how to interview people who are finishing their student teacher programs. Ryan Pinkerton was there also, and what I was struck with was I asked questions about assessments as kind of an interview question, because it is a question you we need to have assessment and formative assessment be such an ongoing part of what we do as teachers, as educators, that we know how our students are doing at all times. And how to make that seamless and not interfere with instruction, we understand the dilemma, so This needs to be heavily focused on teacher input, I think, to make it successful. We've seen places where it hasn't been successful within our own district, and we've seen places where it has been successful, and so we need to be cognizant of that.
And I know you guys and our teachers, our expert staff, will write tests that by the end of the year, we're going to say, you know what, this many kids are going to be advanced. Let's Phil has a cold that day, he's probably going to be advanced or proficient. That would be my expectation as a board member and as a parent. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
My question is, again, about the teacher on special assignment, is how do you visualize this person, this additional person, working with the staffs at the various schools?
Give it to one of our experts here.
One way would be to, Darla's already begun some of this work, showing our staff at our sites how they can use Data Director and the scanners to create their own assessments. But part of it is also working with teachers to look at the data they do have and how to analyze it and how to make adjustments in instruction or in programs. So that's another big part of it. If we're developing common assessments, we need the TOSIS to do some of the legwork. We want the input from the sites, but it's very time-consuming. And so our math TOSIS, our ELA TOSIS, could concentrate on content and drafting and looking at all of our documents, like our state documents, frameworks, common core standards, to make sure we're incorporating that. Getting input from our sites, but our assessment person can help do that part of actually inputting them. And it would be very difficult, I think, for Darla to try to do that much work for both K-6 and 7-12.
Thank you.
Bruce? And you know, I'm just going to ask you, Bruce, I don't want this to be a debate. I'm sorry, I'm just getting kind of late.
I didn't think
and
I was making
cranky.
It a debate. I thought I was just making comments.
No, you are, and I'm okay. Sorry. I
do these things. You know, testing and assessment is essential in education, so you know where you've come from and where you're going and what the results are. But I just want to remind the board that testing is not a learning mode. When you start testing students, they are not learning. You're just getting data from them to find out what they know. So the more testing you do, the less learning that's going on in that classroom. Those students are being tested and they're regurgitating what they know, but they're not learning new things. So I hope that the board in its wisdom doesn't go overboard on the testing. Thank you.
Okay, anybody else on number 7? Okay, let's move on to number 8.
Number 8 is our classroom of the future. This is a one that obviously will be taking on a multi-year approach. And so this is really about getting some of the stuff we need phased in. We will need to explore future options, and this largely is about getting our infrastructure in place and then very importantly developing our staff. So if you look at the actual programmatic implications, we see laptops, we see interactive tools like the Mobies and the clickers you saw at a recent board meeting, projectors, document cameras. The wireless infrastructure we believe is really important to put in place. Professional development, the reinstating of our educational technology teacher on special assignment, investigating ebooks, which really gets to the e-textbook area, and really looking at some model programs and some funding sources, because this stuff gets expensive fast, and we have a $1.6 million price tag on just the first phase of this. But again, from what I was even seeing yesterday with some new teachers and the way they are using technology in instruction, it's exciting students, and it's and we need to be innovative. And get more innovative.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? And I'd ask you to come now and talk to us now. Going once, going twice. Amelia, did you have something you wanted to say about this?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond and mention that we had received a lot of input on this initiative, not just this one, all the initiatives from teachers that are on committees, such as the District Technology Committee, the District Forum. So teachers have had the input, the teachers. This is just our first year, so we're looking at wireless infrastructure for our schools. We're going to need to phase that in because it's expensive. And so we're looking at future wireless tablets and trying to phase out software so we can do more with online web-based resources so that the kids can get to them from home, 24/7 access.
Okay. Before I go back to the board, is there anybody else that would like to address this item? Okay. Okay. Go ahead, Mark.
So, Amelia, thank you for reminding me, which I was trying to remind myself, where this is now the bite-sized pieces, the Halloween candy as opposed to the big candy bar. And so I try to stay within that framework. One of the first things that came to mind as I was looking at the Create the Classroom of the Future is I know IBM has a, what they call a campus somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they invite schools to come in and go through it. Mac, I think, is trying to copy that, and I think HP may have one as well. So I'm hoping at some point we're looking maybe the year after this or somewhere down the 5 years that we're looking at participating in those kinds of programs so we're really up on what's going on.
And in that area, I would like to say we do have, you know, as one of the programmatic implications to go visit model programs, and I can't say enough. I mean, it's been many years since I've been there, but the annual Q conference that we do send staff members to, mm-hmm. That's the place. That's where you're going to find the new stuff and the new technologies and practice sessions and the ability to use things. And so we've been active in that. I know Amelia's been very active in getting teachers and getting staff to the Q conference, and it's fantastic.
And I hope we continue that, and I actually hope that we can as a group talk about putting more money in here for travel, because right now we've got about $500. Mm-hmm. And I think this is just way too big a topic to do that. So, appreciate that. Thank you.
Initiative number 9.
Okay, number 9. As Dr. Prater said in his preface there, we need to develop healthier solutions to what has been 4 years of impasse at the bargaining table with our teachers' association. We also, in this initiative, want to begin the end. We need to be open to looking at those things and would like to work with our association on those things. We have requested to add an administrative designee for two of our schools where we have our largest special education populations. This would be a teacher that would be either in or working on an administrative credential. So again, kind of working on that career pathway as a half-time position at both C.L. Smith and Baywood Elementary. And we're looking for collective bargaining health. Our price tag for this is $112,000, and that is primarily for those administrative designees.
Thank you. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? Okay, seeing nobody. Is board comments? Mr. Buckman, followed by Mr. Angel.
Thank you. I'm very excited about this because I think within our teaching staff here, as outlined, there's just tremendous possibility and leadership, whether they become administrators or stay at the site. My hope is that in future years we'll be looking at building career pathways for classified as well.
Yes.
So as we start empowering the clerical staff at the elementary sites and at the sites to free their principals, they're going to be learning tremendous skills. Mm-hmm. And one of the shortages in the state of California right now is CBOs. Russell? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We can probably grow within our own district some of the staff we're going to need in the future, some of those
right.
Non-teaching administrators, and so I'm hoping that eventually we'll build that into this also as a career pathway.
Phil?
I probably speak for some of the Baywood staff, but thank you. You know, they all asked for help for Mr. Jennison, so.
Yeah, I think we have some high-impact special ed settings where this will be appreciated.
Okay. Number 10.
This is the Access to college and career pathways. We need to make a move toward more A through G CSU UC fulfillment. We know that not every student is going to college, but every student needs to graduate career and or college ready. One aspect is having access to the A through G requirements, and that's one of our measurements here. Success, increase the A through G through additional opportunities, working with the regents of the UC CSUs, addressing areas where the difference is made. One of those gatekeepers seems to be Algebra 2, again, going back to the math initiatives. And fully implement AVID and articulate CTE. The price tag is $34,000.
Come on, Mark. But before you go,
I can go.
No, I do want to invite. I do want to invite anybody from the public to please, if you have comments about this, please come forward. Seeing nobody, Mr. Buckman.
Yes, thank you. As I looked at this, I was very excited about the AVID program. Very excited about that. As I sit on the ROP board, there's more and more talk about outreach to parents to understand that ROP offers A to G classes, and that there's really some fine models in the state, one in particular being San Mateo, for implementing that. And so I'd like to suggest somehow, and I have no idea how we're going to find the money, to put in this budget and in among these district actions, outreach to parents and students so that they understand that it's all not sitting in a classroom, but there's some hands-on ways to to go beyond and actually find careers. And so some kind of outreach to the community or to the middle school at least.
We happen to have a good connection with the head guy of the ROP.
Yeah,
San
he's
Mateo.
An interesting
former employee.
Okay. I'm sorry, Jim.
Okay, first I want to commend the staff on all their hard work on this. This is an impressive document. But I do have a question, or at least a comment, on this particular goal as far as it relates to the college and career centers at the high schools. It's been my observation that these have not always been a very comfortable or welcoming situation for EL students, and maybe I can't generalize to other Hispanic or Latino students, but it's something that I think needs to be kind of looked at and addressed is making them or looking at bringing that to.
Okay. I just want to thank the staff. This was incredibly thought-provoking material, and we probably wouldn't be here this late if it wasn't. And I want to thank you for using your vast knowledge for making me think.
It's a great team over
great,
there.
Great, and just a great document. Thank you very much.
So when you add, just one quick conclusion, when you add this together, we get nearly $6.2 million. And some of these are one-time costs and will come from ARRA and jobs bill money that we have not spent. Some comes from developer fees, as you know, for the preschool infrastructure, which is not the general fund. And we will have budgetary recommendations that will include some cost savings to pay for some of this. But truly, this is largely taken out of our unallocated reserves, and it is an investment into teaching and learning and into students who are all, by all accounts, slipping and slipping in school support. And so it is an investment into the future of our school district. So it's what we believe at this point will begin to move us from good to great, and look forward to continuing to work on it. And at the next iteration, it'll largely be tied with a budget recommendation we'll be asking you to adopt. So thanks for the opportunity. I'm sorry it took so long. I was trying to get through them quickly.
One question I do have, and you can probably send it on the Friday update. I expect some feedback on the $6 million from some of our constituencies. Can I get an amount, how much of it comes from developer fees?
Sure. I'm sure we
I have
do
an
that.
Idea of what's one time, but
yeah.
I want to see.
No, I'm sure we could do that. That'll be part of the budget recommendations.
I know
so
Russell's
I'm sure we
could
do that.
Erica, Ellen, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I would just ask that when we do the budget piece that we have sort of the net cost is as Phil was pointing out, and I would also like to know on the budget breakdown what is one-time spending and what is ongoing, if we could just have some ideas about that. Thanks.
I'm sure we can do that.
So, Eric, it seems like you've got your view, and the staff have their plates full. I know we'll be hearing again about this in about 2 weeks. I think some of the things that I heard, and I just want to reflect that overall, I think the board is pleased with these initiatives and lauds the staff on these. We got that said, though, I think that it's important to, I would concur with Mr. Angel, that the common assessments are important. They're important for the students, and I think they're important for the staff as well to help formulate their teaching. Some concerns from Mr. Quisenberry about how we're approaching some of the EL things. I think that's important to discuss as well. And then I think, Jim, you had said at one point you had some concern about looking at this as just AYP information. Did you want to address that? No? I know it's getting late, but I heard you talking about it, and it's probably important we bring it up right now.
Well, it just, I think actually Rick has addressed it too, with the issue is that when we look at how we're doing, we certainly have to be concerned about AYP, but we also have to have a much broader picture. So I think Rick addressed that.
So we'll see this again in 2 weeks, and I'm assuming there'll be some adjustments made to it. And then when we're asked to approve the budget, then what I think the board would like to see, and certainly what I would like to see, is some explanation or reference in the budget to how these things go together, so that somebody, a school board member or somebody from the public, can be able to actually look at the budget and say, okay, we want to spend $500,000 on this. This is where that might fall on budget line X. I think something like that might be helpful so that we can actually reference this to the budget itself. I don't think many people will want to see that, but it would be nice just, in terms of transparency, I think. I think the final thing that I'd like to close with is I'm assuming we are putting this on the website. This has gone out to the principals, and that I guess they need staff, community members, students need a place to address any concerns. I don't know if they would send that to you or if they would send it to Rick or Rita. Who would you like that input sent to?
Well, what I'll do is I'll process this.
Right.
It's a lot of information.
Stew through it.
We're getting compressed into this sandwich.
Right, yeah, I know that.
I plan on posting it on the web in a pretty rigorous process. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of factors involved because we really need to communicate these things. Really, the SMART goals, really, in my view, are a byproduct mm-hmm. of the initiatives that were adopted, right, for which we received tons of feedback, yeah, on. When you look at the annualized SMART goals, you'll see that they're very mm-hmm. doable, right, in large measure, because they've broken them down over that 5-year time frame. So when you look at them, they're deliberately designed so that they are reachable. They're within the context of the single school plans for student achievement at all of our sites. The challenge, of course, is putting all these pieces together, mm-hmm. and putting together planning teams for the summer,
right?
So that you have site autonomy in how that looks at each site. I'm mm-hmm. very much uninterested in micromanaging that process. So the principals and their staffs need to be able to have the green light to go forward to do those things. And so we're running out of time in the year to do it.
Right, absolutely. And I think that the discussions we've had over the past 3 or 4 months over this have given a lot of time and and opportunities for input. I think now that we've put some flesh on the bones, as it were, with the SMART goals and with the money, there may be some additional comments that we'll hear from people. And
No doubt about it.
And I do appreciate your the time constraints, because it is, you know, we're talking basically less than 20 days until the end of the semester and the need to move forward. I think it will be interesting to see from my perspective, and I was the one that was complaining about it being late, how the schools put this together in a coherent way that works for each individual site.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that's something you have an interest in, and I think that's something the board has an interest in, too. So when we're seeing the goal, the school site plans for next year, I think what I'm going to be expecting to see is some coherence in the school site relating to the SMART goals that we're seeing here and giving us a way to judge what each school is doing. So I think enough said, and it's probably time for us to move on to the action consent agenda. Thank you for indulging me. So if we 14, reappointment to the San Luis Obispo SELPA Community Advisory Committee. 14, poll. 15, approval of additional international student exchange program for 2011-2012. And 16, approval of out-of-state field trips for the Ford AAA troubleshooting contest and the National Skills USA competition. Okay. Is there a motion?
Yeah, I'll move approval of items 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15, and 16.
Okay. I'll second the motion.
Been moved by Mrs. Rogers, seconded by Mr. Quesenberry. Is there any discussion, any comments from the public on this? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Mr. Buckman, item 14, please.
Yes, item 14. I'd really like to take this opportunity to congratulate Michelle Ronzon on her reappointment, and I also would like to congratulate her because she's president of the Baywood PTA, so she's really busy. Thank you. So I'd like to move approval of item 14.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mr. Angel. Is there any other discussion on that one? Okay, seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on down to item number 18, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to put anything on the advanced agenda?
Chris, I don't know if this is an advanced agenda item, but as we keep talking about putting portables on the sites, it dawned on me that some of the sites have different amounts of grass and blacktop, and I don't know if we can get on the Friday memo probably, but get some kind of indication of the percent of coverage by buildings. And I don't know if that's something that's going to be easy to pull together or whether it'll take some time, but the footprint of the buildings and the acreage of the grass, and I don't know if we need to go into blacktop or not.
Are you concerned, Mark, that that's being shrunk or something?
My concern is as we continue to have a need, or we continue to add portables, that it's something I'd like to have in the back of my mind, and so it's a matter of how much infringement we.
Okay. Jeff, do you want to address that?
It's our goal not to infringe on play space. California Department of Education does have guidelines. They're standards. They're not requirements. There is the California.
Anything else? Okay, let's move on to item number 19. I hope I didn't miss anybody. Reports by board members. Phil?
Just real quick, I know it's late, but some things you just have to report out. Slow High Tiger Awards, really great ceremony. I got to attend that. And who else? Dr. Prater and Mr. Quesenberry, Ms. Sheffer, Mr. Buckman. So a lot of us were there giving out tons of awards. I also had the opportunity to attend the County Writers Award Workshop, and I know I'd like to thank some of our teachers who were graders on or judges on the essays, and those would be Mr. Banfield from, I think, Baywood, and Mr. Bedrigan, thank you, and Mr. Bedrigan from Morro Bay High, for helping grade, taking their own time. And it was a great ceremony put on by the county. We had several San Luis Coastal students represented, and here's a personal plug, including my second grader, Amanda. So I had to put that in there. Bishop's Peak Open House was a phenomenal event as well. Lots of community, a lot of kids playing, running, getting out there and working on that wellness. I didn't see, there were no desserts that I saw. And kudos to it. I don't know the fourth grade teacher at Bishop's Peak, but the quality of assignments I saw on that teacher's wall just showed there's so much teaching going on in that classroom, as well as our teacher of the year, Ms. Rosenfield. Adults were giving her hugs and saying, "I remember when you were my teacher." So just great stuff there. And, of course, the Teach Dinner was another great event, a lot of fun. And I'm understanding for you teachers there'll be some more grant money available next year because it was such a successful event. Other than that,
bring them out.
I'm sorry.
Bring them out.
Bring them out. First graders at Pacheco have to send somebody along and then write about them. And so my first grader, Katie, she just loves the whole board meeting thing. She loves to watch it on TV. And so she wanted to say that Clifford attended the board meeting and she was going to write about it. And she put her dress on him so he looked really good. And I didn't want to do that, but that's all right.
That's so cute.
On how positive they felt about themselves and how much the leadership conference motivated them to be better leaders and more confident leaders. So that's it for me. Thank you.
And I would just say, on behalf of all the people that the classified dinner last night, it was a great event. It's just always a wonderful event. So that was a good one. And then Mr. Buckman and I were at CSBA last weekend. Was it last weekend? 2 weekends ago. On Monday, I believe you weren't able to come. You were doing some other things, but we were able to lobby our legislators, Kacho Asajian and Sam Blakesley. We had meetings with them and were able to talk to them about concerns with education, lobby them for at least what we believe is important, which is a continuation of the tax extension for the next year so that we can have some consistency in our budget and some assurance in what we're doing. So we were able to do that. Reminder for folks, tomorrow night is the Morro Bay Band Concert, and then a bunch of open houses on Thursday night as well, and tomorrow night. So that said, meeting's adjourned.